Thank you all for staying around. Must mean you don't have flights until tomorrow morning like myself. But greatly appreciate the work of the organizers in putting this together and working with my schedules on getting you information. I kind of put the wording in greenhouses in parentheses because a greenhouse in Texas is kind of an interesting definition. We can go all the way from standard glass houses to things that look like a carport, and they're probably all called greenhouses. So there's a real integration kind of between nursery production to greenhouse production in the state of Texas. At the same time, it's something not to be underestimated. Way back when I was first hired, I had a bet with the department head at that time whether or not ornamentals would surpass cotton in the value to the state of Texas. And I was able to collect on that bet. So it was ornamentals and cotton kind of go back and forth as the number one cash crop in the state. We won't talk where cattle are in the situation. So I'm going to kind of focus on work that's come out of Texas. Talking about Western flower thrips management on a global basis could be a whole symposium on itself. So I'm going to really focus on what's happening. What I kind of first did is went back, which is something I tend to do, and just look at what's the patterns in Western flower thrips, and I was pretty interesting listening to the various talks and people using data from lots of different times. If you look at just publications on the topic of Franklinia occidentalis from JEE and Environmental Ant, it's a pretty constant flow across the last 10 years. Admittedly, there's some fluctuations, and probably if we did some kind of meta-analysis, we could pull out some kind of pattern on correlations between years. But I kind of look at that and say it's between 5 and 8 publications a year. To me, that conclusion is this is a problem that has not gone away. It's a problem that I'll call a press rather than a pulse, and is something that will be worked on probably for the foreseeable future as well. So what I will then kind of just allude to some patterns of results on various things that we've looked at. I think the first thing is to kind of, I use this a lot in my classes when I do teach, and I kind of thinking about pest management. Pest management's really not that complicated of a phenomenon. If we look at it really from a population level, there are only 4 ways you can influence a population. You have arrows going into the population, meaning ways you can add to those numbers, and arrows going out. Now, in many grower situations, especially in ornamentals, you know, they would just as soon take that number, there it goes, and kind of export those thrips to some other area. Okay, so whether they ship it out and give it to somebody else, so you can have thrips that do leave the situation. Unfortunately, in ornamentals, it seems, just by the common name Western flower thrips, they tend to like to hang out in those areas. You've had a lot of people talk about the roles of surrounding vegetation and how that may impact various systems. And so obviously you can have thrips that fly into the system. You know, in a greenhouse operation, it's all over the board again. You do have physical sides that can eliminate that. Many growers have no influence on what will happen in the acreages around them. And so managing that in our situation is really difficult. Obviously, the other ways is to influence the birth rate so that you have fewer thrips that are working in the population. And then the other is increasing the death rate. And of course, a lot of where we all tend to work is way over in this kind of category. What I'm going to kind of really focus on a lot today is not only kind of looking at all of these, and I'm not going to look at a lot of them in any specificity, but I think a lot of the issues for integrated pest management and ornamentals is first, how do you get the population down to a reasonable level so that you can actually do some integrated approaches? Okay, so the goal that I'm going to say, at least in ornamentals, is to have what I will just call sustainable control. In other words, similar to the vegetable situation or the strawberry situation, I think it's very easy for you to know that in ornamentals, it's an aesthetic problem first and foremost. Again, in Texas, we don't see a whole lot of hospital virus issues, and we never really have a population get so high where we're going to have physiological issues. So, Frank, at least you do have a damage threshold in strawberries. It's a little bit old. There is no such thing as a damage threshold in ornamentals. And it's very similar to what John Palumbo talked about in vegetables, that threshold can change dramatically, depending on the type of season and what the market conditions are doing. Valentine's Day and roses tends to be a little bit lax depending on how the rose market is going. If they're selling a lot of roses, they'll sell a lot of lower quality roses as well. The day after Valentine's Day, the threshold skyrockets to zero because no one's buying roses. That's just one example. So an issue that is a concern for us in Texas, and this is data that Scott Ludwig provided to me in a project he's working with Joe Funderburk and Dow AgroSciences, is kind of looking at resistance issues across the U.S. And in Texas, pretty much, I will dare say that the THRIPS IPM program is based on applications of concern. And these are three different probit lines, this being a probit line from a susceptible culture, this being a probit line from a grower that uses moderate amounts of conserve and moderate applications in the state of Texas, and this being a grower that, well, has had a lot of problems and has had to make a lot of applications. The concern for us, of course, in a very easy format, is when this starts happening, we have got some really significant problems. And what are the alternatives for growers? And when we have this also happening, this is really still, admittedly, what our IPM programs rely on, is the timely applications of effective insecticides. A grower that starts sharing this population or is in a county where there's a lot of growers together, this is really problematic. So Scott, together with Dow, is working with this grower to reduce the number of conserve applications that they may be using. But this is indeed real life data from our state. So there's a real concern about relying solely on insecticides to control western flower thrips. So again, kind of when we look at it from a sustainable answer, there's no doubt that the insecticides provide effective and short-term control. They're easy to use, all the things you already know, but we do know that we have resistance issues in our state. I'm not going to run through a whole list of insecticides. I hope you went to the ornamental session earlier in the week to catch a lot of that information. I don't want to just focus on that. We do have good control in our state in some issues, but we do have resistance issues creeping in. So I don't think insecticides by themselves will provide a sustainable IPM approach in ornamentals. Now, to kind of look at this sustainability, and we were fortunate that we've been able to have funding from the USDA Floriculture Initiative, we quickly came to a conclusion that this is not just an entomological problem. It's indeed we are dealing with western flower thrips, but we've been able to put together a rather effective team to try to look at this question from a lot of different perspectives. Carlos Bogran, I know, is in the room. He's kind of had some mixed appointment in Texas A&M, both in plant pathology and entomology. You know, if a grower is focusing only on western flower thrips and forgetting all the pathological issues, we're not going to be able to advance in an integrated pest management program. We've been very fortunate to have a horticulturalist on the project. Entomologists never really figure out how to grow plants very well. You know, it's always an embarrassment to bring growers in and show them what we grow, because we always say we're just rearing insects on them, and they kind of look at it and wonder, yeah, no wonder you're in academia. So we have Fred Davies from the horticulture department. He's also a plant physiologist, and as you'll see as I move into another area of the talk, he's a very important parameter. I'm also very interested in taking things from the laboratory into the field. So the third individual, Scott Ludwig, who's part of the Texas IPM program, very important kind of as a flow through of information that goes either from you know, the lab bench out to the field, or him bringing field issues to the lab for us to work on. So a lot of what I'll talk about is about them. I've been an administrator for 6.5 years, so a little bit less about me. Now, we've been doing a lot of work in biocontrol, and I think a lot of you have seen a little bit of talks on this. Untek Lim is in the back of the room. He did his PhD on this, and Joe Funderburk was here. I think that had all the global scientific expertise on thrips nematodes that affect Western flower thrips. But I kind of want to talk about this in the following way. Top, of course, is just our target. If you break open a Western flower thrips under a microscope, which is always a real fun thing to do, this is a very healthy one, healthy female, lots of ovules there. One that's been parasitized with this little Thripanema nicowoodii is just chock full of nematodes, and you see no ovules there. And the mechanism is basically that the nematodes are starving the Western flower thrips so that it doesn't have any energy to allocate eggs. Now, our goal always was to try to use this kind of methodology to suppress pest populations, just to get them down to a lower level where you have a pathogen kind of working with it. And when we did some larger scale field trials, where basically we ran a lot of experiments in large cages in our greenhouses on chrysanthemums, we looked at plants where we inoculated with Western flower thrips without any control procedures, those inoculated with the nematodes, and those together with nematodes in conserve. I'm just going to draw your attention to this one right here. This is the control. Here we have we have the control here, and this one with the nematodes. We were unable to get control at all. It was an exciting technology, but it was something that we couldn't get to actually work in the field. So we kind of have kept going on and looking at various natural enemies, and again, I'm not going to have time to cover all of them. That wasn't a good result. But we knew to get sustainability, like a lot of people have talked about, as well as especially when you're working at low populations, you need to augment the system so your predators or your parasitoids have other food sources. Remember, we're talking about an aesthetic crop here. You need to have very low Western flower thrips, and for a sustainable system, need to have other types of forage available. There has been a lot of work done with pollen, and you can just see here we've done a lot of work as well in Texas greenhouses where we augmented at least with apple pollen, and you can see the following results. It's great where we put no predaceous mites and no pollen. All right, we got most thrips right there. We used only mites by themselves. Indeed, you get suppression. You know what was kind of interesting? If you just put pollen in and nothing, you got better suppression than if you put the mites in. But if you use the mites and the pollen together, we did indeed get excellent suppression. So we knew that adding an alternative food source indeed helped the overall biocontrol. And this has been shown in a lot of different systems around the world. Now, in our Texas system, what got to be really interesting and what we believe started happening here is we have a lot of oak pollen that flies into a greenhouse all on its own. Apple pollen was a better source of food for Western flower thrips, but oak pollen indeed helped the predaceous mites. So again, kind of adding alternative food sources will help the ability to bring about biocontrol. Now, there are some concerns. Depending on how you apply pollen, again, it's an aesthetic plant, whether the pollen stays on the leaves can influence the overall kind of aesthetic value. Right now, I'll be honest, there is not a Texas grower out there doing anything of this sort that I know of. Now, what's also become interesting in the system is various, was alluded to in an earlier talk about tank mixing, different insecticides. Biocontrol has kind of adapted that technology, and I call it tank mixing natural enemies, and especially in terms of ornamentals. And so a lot of people think if you get some kind of control with one natural enemy species, why not add a second one to get better control? And there's been a lot of work done on integral predation, and we've done a lot of work on that. And I just want to show you one set of results that might be influential on how we look at biocontrol of Western flower thrips. So this is work that we have done making inoculative augmentative releases of either aureus insidiosus by itself or aureus insidiosus together with Amblyseas degenerans. And again, this is really work done by Andrew Chow about 2 years ago, and if I get it wrong, he'll be here to answer any questions. So basically, we look at the number of Western flower thrips per flower over time. And again, you can see in the control, we get, you know, a blowout of Western flower thrips. You know, 100 Western flower thrips per flower in an ornamental crop is just an obscene number. They would have thrown that away by that time. Adding aureus insidiosus, as Joe Funderburk talked about, important to the vegetable situation in Florida, you know, indeed, we got rather good suppression with aureus insidiosus. Yet, if we put an added Amblyseas degenerans, believing that that would really help the situation because it fed on eggs, you actually got a little bit of a release, that you had higher numbers of Western flower thrips where we had the two together. And Andrew did a lot of nice studies and kind of prey switching done by aureus insidiosus that kind of indicated that it was altering its overall foraging behavior based on the overall densities of what it came and encountered with. End of the day story is two natural enemies were not better than one. And now this kind of fits pretty well with what theoretical predictions of integral predation would suggest. Anytime you have interactions that are occurring off the target host, it tends to be detrimental to biocontrol. Something I'm doing that doesn't mind. So in biocontrol, what we have concluded from many years of study is we have a high degree of variability in the results. And I think this is something the biocontrol industry really wants to work on, or should, is kind of give risk assessments or the probability of success or what kinds of conditions you need to have success. We've been able to do this pretty well for white flies. We're pretty far away from it on Western flower thrips. There's still a lot of issues with candidate selection, which natural enemies to release, and I think the insectaries are still kind of releasing a lot of different things for use. Not a lot of data on a lot of these. In the ornamental session, there was a lot of work on release technologies, whether it be sachets of various types, still out of the bottle, banker plants, and whatnot. And again, I think there's a lot of information that needing alternate prey, and of course being careful how you select that, but again, more is not always better. So you'll just see I have a lot of issues together here to get to being more reliable. The last one that I'm going to talk about really briefly, because I'm going to tell you that you should go see Andrew Chow's talk at about 11:30-ish, where he'll talk a lot more how we altered plant relationships. And in ornamentals, we're really looking for something simple. There's way too many varieties, way too many cultivars, so we're looking for simple methods to alter thrips performance. And real quickly, what we found is by altering commercial fertilizers, we could indeed alter how Western flower thrips performed on plants. So this is just here from chrysanthemums. You can see that as we reduced fertilizer, we actually got lower numbers. And interesting, where you hyper-fertilized, you got lower numbers. But what was really bad is if you used the recommended rates of Pete's professional fertilizer, in this case, you got the most Western flower thrips possible. A problem in this situation in ornamentals, we found in chrysanthemums, they were such a fertilizer hog, it was really hard to produce a good crop altering that. So I'm going to skip this slide. But what we did found is, at least in roses, there were some opportunities on woody crops. And on earlier studies that we had done with on two-spotted spider mites, is that we could really knock back the amount of fertilizer and significantly influence the prey population. So we did a lot of work here, and Andrew, I'm going to not try to scoop you too much on this, on roses with Western flower thrips. This is work that Andrew just finished. And the real take-home message is the following. This was using Osmocote on roses, two different growers. And over on the blue bar here is, I believe, 100% recommended rate of Osmocote. The red bar is a 50% recommendation, and the yellow bar is 30%, and the value on the y-axis are number of shoots. There were no significant differences in row shoots. But the real take-home message to these growers is they save between $10,000 and $12,000 on their crop, especially on the cost of fertilizer. So I'm going to end here with the last slide. So again, kind of looking at things for us, insecticides are going to be instrumental still. We do have resistance issues, a lot of issues still before biocontrol can become feasible. But we do believe by altering at least plant relationships by fertilizers does provide at least some sustainable practices for Western flower thrips control. And I know I'm out of time, so thank you very much.